Not many people recover from cancer and go on to win an Olympic medal. Not only that, but do it barely 2 years after undergoing chemotherapy. But South African rower Lawrence Britton has, claiming silver with partner Sean Keeling in the men's coxless pair at the Rio Olympics in 2016. This is his story.
You know, afterwards, and after they'd made the diagnosis, they said I'd had it for a while, possibly even 2 years. And I think those 2 years of trying to be a professional athlete and trying to train at the top of the game and having this in your body and having the cancer in your body and just slowing you down, slowly draining all your energy was really, really tough for me to keep training harder, keep training better and smarter, and the performance is kind of just, you know, stagnating and having a dip here. Then we'd kind of look for something, you know, maybe we thought I got some bilharzia or something from the water we're rowing on, or, you know, lots of different things like that along the way. And then we'd treat for that and have a, you know, bounce back a little bit, have a good week or two, and we think maybe we sorted it out, and then kind of just going in this downward spiral, but really slow and I think really tricky to pinpoint, you know. And also as an athlete, you're tired all the time. Like, your job is to train hard and to put your body on the line all the time. So it's difficult to say, oh, you know, I'm a bit tired today. I'm feeling a bit under pressure, whereas everybody is feeling like that. The whole team is under a bit of pressure. So it was very difficult to make the jump. And I think we just kept looking for more and more things and kind of getting further and further down the road. And, you know, 2014 was not a great season for me. I started off really in a decent place in the top crew of the team, and then having to get dropped from the team into the second boat that season was really brutal, really tough. And then even through world champs, we were going, you know, worse and worse, and had an average world champs. And then so then we had the break of the season, and then as we started the next season again, like October 2014, I was still feeling terrible. And then that's when, you know, the doctor, who's actually my mom, the team doctor is my mom. So it was really tough for her, I think, to make that step and go, okay, well, we actually have to look a bit harder because something's definitely not right. And then, you know, and then I think as soon as we did those scans, it was very clear that something very terrible was going wrong. So, yeah, and then it was straight from being an athlete 1 week to in the chemo room the next week.
Can you remember where you were when you first got the news that, and am I right in saying it was stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma?
Yeah, so I'd gone to the hospital to do a lot of scans and some tests. And then obviously my mom and my dad is also a doctor, so they were at the hospital and they were there. And then I'd been under some heavy medication for one of the biopsies that they had to do as one of the tests. And then obviously when that started wearing off, my parents had found out, and then they sent me down at home and told me this pretty shocking news. And that week was, I mean, for obviously the treatment and everything else that came with it was very tough. But that week, again, like, the adjustment is so difficult for me. And the same similar challenges with the lockdown is the adjustment to adding a whole season, or, you know, the adjustment to finding out that suddenly you're not an athlete anymore and you're a patient was really, really tough. And I think that's like so shocking and so like abrupt, really difficult.
So many people go through cancer, Lawrence, and many people obviously survive it, but maybe give us a sense of what that whole chemo experience is like. And it obviously, I would imagine, would have been a double whammy for you, being a pro athlete who's used to being physically on top of his game, to now being at the complete mercy of this chemotherapy.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, everyone has a friend or a family member or themselves have gone through it and know how brutal it is. And it really, I mean, the chemo was, honestly, it was so terrible. I went through 6 3-week cycles. So, you know, and it just each cycle is just eating your body away and you're just feeling worse and worse. And like, even just mentally preparing for the next cycle was tough, you know, and you knew it was time to go back to the hospital to start the next round was really, really brutal. And yeah, I mean, I had this thing where, so I wasn't doing any training at all during the chemo, just resting as much as I could. But I had a thing like getting to the hospital, I wanted to take the stairs every time. It was on the third floor of the chemo room. And like, by, I think like the you know, fourth, fifth cycle, the stairs were like, that was like a full day of training just to get the body to the top of the stairs. And yeah, I mean, you just feel honestly feel so terrible all the time, and really, really taking it out of you. And then as you, you know, because the first week of each cycle is like the main part of the chemo, and then those next 2 weeks basically just allowing you to recover a little bit so they can smoke you again. So it's really, really tough. And you're in the, when you're getting it, you're in the chemo room. You've got all the other cancer patients around you. Everyone else is going through the same challenges. So really, really tough time. And, you know, you've got to just draw strength. And, you know, luckily I have good family and such a supportive family, a good team that they, you know, they came and sat with me during the chemo sessions. And it was really cool not to be going through that alone.
You still must have gone to some dark places, Lawrence, and I would imagine that rowing must have been the last thing on your mind, and certainly making a comeback must have been the last thing on your mind.
Yeah, I think when you get thrown with a challenge like that, is, you know, the rowing becomes a nice thing that you used to do. You know, suddenly there's something much more important at stake, and, you know, yeah, I didn't think about rowing at all. And also there were so many complications. You know, I think the doctors knew I was an athlete. They were trying really hard to not, you know, hit me with doses that were going to do damage, but, you know, these medicines are really not healthy for you at all. So, you know, they could have destroyed, you know, lots of my vital organs that, you know, that would end any hopes of a rowing or a sporting career. So I wasn't really thinking about it. I was just, it's all about getting better. And only towards the end, like, you know, the last month or two, then the doctors were, okay, well, things have gone really well. We've eliminated all the cancer. The scans were coming back really well, and the damage that they were worrying about didn't seem to have occurred. So it was all about then starting to think about rowing and maybe coming back into training. Whereas before that, it was just about getting better and just about getting healthy again. And yeah, it was really cool because when I started training again, so after the last chemo, I had to give it enough. Month or so just to let all that stuff go through the system, and then I had to start like really, really slowly because, you know, your muscles, you haven't used them properly for a good couple months. They've been basically poisoned for months and months, so you don't want to do any more damage. And it was a long journey back. I had a heart rate cap, so I could only really train at really, really low intensity and just kind of building up the base. And then eventually I had to go and do a stress ECG at the hospital. So run on the treadmill, test the heart, see if any issues were there. And I remember after that, then the doctor, he looked at me and he said, "No, everything looks good. Now go win us some medals." So it was really cool to get those chains off and be able to go and really train hard again. That was really special, special time.
Can you remember your first day of training post chemo, and what did you do? Were you in the gym? Did you go for a light jog down the road? What was that first day?
Yeah, so most of the first days were just on the bike, training on a stationary trainer, but like really light. I had the heart rate cap and basically just pedaling at like no resistance. I was hitting my heart rate cap. And then it was like the days I remember more is like getting back in the boat. And that was so awesome. Like I've got videos from the coach of me getting back in the boat, and it's quite terrible to watch because I'd put on so much weight. I think I put on like 20 kilos during the chemo. So this huge guy, I could barely move in the boat, and basically thing is sinking under me. But, you know, then slowly, you know, making progress there and starting to, first I built up the kilometers and the time of training, and then the doctors gave me the go ahead on the heart rate. We started lifting that up, and the thing I probably remember the most was I'd probably done about 2 or 3 months of training, and luckily the coach had let me come on March camp, which was up in Lesotho again, and it was, I wasn't training nearly what the rest of the team were training, but it was just nice to be back in there, back in the environment of training properly. And we finished that camp, and I was basically doing the same mileage as everyone else, but just the intensity much lower, and starting to find decent speed again. And then I'd said to the coach, "No, I think I can like start joining in with the team's training again and maybe some crew boats and stuff." And he just told me, "No way, you're still way too fat to join in on the team's training." So the next 2 weeks they had traveled to Italy to start the season and start the international racing. And I basically just like crash dieted. Like, I ate just dinner once a day and lots of coffee during the day. And I think I lost like 7 kilos by the time they'd get back, they'd got back. So then I knew, okay, things are really going well, back on track.
But Lawrence, and so in the interim, I mean, you would have, I mean, just take you back to pre-cancer diagnosis, was you'd been, like you said, relegated to the B boat. Now, even, you know, a few months down the line, you would have been way down the pecking order and physically compromised. What is the process to getting you back into a position where you were even in contention to go to Rio in 2016? Because by now, we would have been into 2015, am I right?
Yeah, so in 2015... So we started that season and like I joined in on that camp, but I wasn't really in any position to race or go and do anything. And then I was quite lucky actually because I'd been training quite well and I'd started to find decent form again and not, I mean, I was still way off where I had been before, but I was doing all the training and I was coping with all the intensity and, you know, and actually this is when I could start to feel how sick I'd been before because, you know, I'd do a hard session and then suddenly, you know, where I'd expect you to feel tired for, you know, 2 or 3 days, suddenly I was feeling like 100% by the afternoon. So I'm like, oh, this is something definitely was wrong before because this is how it should, this is what it's supposed to feel like. And things are going really great. And then South African Championships was coming around. So I wanted to, I was in the single, obviously training by myself, and I wanted to race there. And the coach had said, no, I must enter the B event. And I told him, no, listen, I'm a professional athlete. I'm not racing in a B event. Like, that's just, it's not for me. And we had quite an argument about it. I had quite a lot of pushback from the powers on that I wasn't up to scratch to race in the A event. And there were some big names racing in the top event. And then what happened was there's not enough entries in the B event. So they pushed everyone into the A event already. So by the time the racing came, I got to race. And I just managed to sneak into the A final. So I think there was probably about like, 14 entries into the event. And top 8 was for the A final. So through the heat, I had to eat all my cookies and race as hard as I could to get through. But I'd made it into the final, which was really, really cool. And then... I didn't have a great race. I think I finished 7th, just taking one name at the end of the race, which was really cool. But then the rest of the season, you know, they were trying to, they had the top boat, which was the men's pair, and that was selected with Sean Keeling, who I ended up going to the Olympics with, and another guy, David Hunt. And the rest of the team, they were trying to build up a 4 that could go and qualify for the Rio Games. So I had my sights set on it, but you know, I knew every little piece had to fall into place for me to make it. And in rowing, the boats qualify, so not the athletes. So the boat can qualify for the games and the coach can change the crew that attends the games the next year. So Sean and David had qualified that boat. And the next year that was the only heavyweight boats qualified, so the competition was really brutal to make it into that boat. And you know, that was when I really started to find the form that I should have been in pre-cancer. You know, I really was right on my A game, hitting numbers that I never hit before and really just dishing up good racing. And then it was quite clear, I think that's by like March, by selection time, that me and Sean were really quick together and doing something that could be really fast by the Olympics.
So you picked for Rio. You guys go there. Give us a sense of where you were ranked or what the expectations, what was the rowing world expecting from you and Sean Keeling as a coxless pair going into those Olympics? Where were you roughly ranked and what were you ranked to finish at that Games?
I think we were 4th. We were ranked 4th going into the Rio Games. And we had some good races early on in the season. And the final race just before the Olympics, well, about 2 months before, it was in Switzerland, and it was the biggest pre-Olympics race where so most countries were there. We weren't really missing anyone in the men's pair. And we raced down the track, and we missed the silver medal by 0.2 of a second. So it was the Kiwis, they were the clear favorites for that year's gold medal. And then it was between, you know, us, the Dutch were really fast in the early season. The British were always really quick. And then us and the Dutch and us and the British had this really close race down the track. And we had just missed out on second and ended up in fourth place between the three of us by 0.2 of a second. So we knew that there was not a lot in it for those that silver and bronze medal. And, you know, it's going to be close to it's going to be right in, you know, fractions between the podium and a silver medal and fourth place and no medal. So, and I think we used that, you know, coming fourth there, I think, you know, it hurt us so much we should have got that silver. You know, we had a great race down the track and we literally lost it on the finish line. So I think it burnt us so much and we really used that to fuel our training for those next 2 months. And, you know, we'd call to each other, you know, 0.2, never again. That's never happening again, that we're going to come on the wrong side of a decision so close. So I think that almost coming fourth there was a little bit of a blessing because it made us really hungry and really fight for those last few split seconds going into Rio. And then we'd had quite a difficult build-up to Rio. You know, I think probably from the chemo, I was still, my body's immune system is not the best. So I often get, you know, upper respiratory, you know, infections. I often have a cold and that sort of thing. So our heat and our semi were definitely not our best races. We weren't firing as well as we should have been. But, you know, we did the business and we got through those races. You know, one of the coaches who coached the guys who won gold in London, he said, it's not about winning the heat or the semi. The goal of the heat is to get into the semi, and the goal of the semi is to get into the final. So we did the job and we got through. And then coming into that final, we knew it was going to be so close. And our goal was actually to really do damage in that second quarter, the second 500 of the race. And we just, you know, it was really windy and really rough at Rio, which is not the best rowing conditions. We wanted to be flat. And, you know, glass water that we can really punish down the track. Whereas this really rough water made it very difficult to row, and especially in that second quarter of the race. And we actually had executed a pretty poor second 500, and a bit in the shoulders and very tight. But we managed to loosen up and find our rhythm in that second half. And coming into that last quarter of the race, I could see that, you know, this time it was the Italians. They'd had a new combination come into the games. And the Dutch had not managed to cope with the rough water of the Olympics. So the Italians and the British were so close. And I could just see, oh, this is the Switzerland ride again. You know, this is going to be so close and down to the wire. And I remember calling to Sean, like, 0.2, this is not happening again. We're not losing this race by that much. And there was this huge finish from us. You know, we really were not letting that medal slip away from us this time, and we're so strong towards the second half of the race. So it was really awesome feeling coming into that last 100 meters, knowing that things have gone well and we can have a go at the Kiwis, not worry about the Italians anymore.
And did you know when you crossed the line that you guys had finished second?
Yeah, because I was shouting at Sean, like, say, we've got silver, like, go for gold, like, come on, we can squeeze out some more, yeah. And when you watch the race, it does look a bit close. Like, you think, oh, the Italians are not that far away, but there's a lot of stuff that were coming back. It was so strong at that point of the race and going so well that I think we knew probably the last, like, 100 meters that bar anything going wrong, we were going to get the silver. And, you know, it was really cool to cross the line and know that you've done something that you've dreamt about your entire life.
And that feeling, Lawrence, I mean, surely you must have thought in that moment, the journey you'd been on, the cancer, the pain of the last sort of 18 to 20 months. I mean, do you get the sense, is it just sheer exhaustion and relief at that stage?
Yeah, I think at the finish line, you just gone through so much pain and you know, those races hurt so much that you're just worrying about how much pain you're in. But I remember thinking at the start line, because that's when you're so nervous and you're really worrying about how much this race is going to hurt. And then I remember thinking back, like, what we've done in the last 18 months absolutely unbelievable. And just being on the start line here at the Olympics is like, should never have happened. You know, it was such a long shot and you've done it. So let's just get through this next 7 minutes and you know, dish up as much as you can. And yeah, I think that feeling of the finish line, you know, it's, as everyone says, it's really hard to put into words. It's, you know, so much emotion and so much effort that you've put in for that, into that, and it's all come together in those 7 minutes, and you've come away with something you've dreamt about for so long, and you've dreamt about it like every rowing session, and even when you're a little kid, you dream about it, standing on the Olympic podium, and then it happens, and it still outdoes all those expectations that you've built up over these years. So yeah, it's really a special.
Any tears after the race or during the Olympic ceremony or seeing your mum and dad and your brothers?
No, I managed to hold it together, but I think my family, they were struggling. There's such an awesome picture of us just at the podium, and like my whole family is crying and I'm just laughing at them with a big smile on my face. So it's a really cool picture.
It's a segue to your family, Lawrence. You come from a rowing family. You mentioned your mom's the national rowing team doctor. Your dad was a rower. You said he nearly qualified for Atlanta 96. And then, of course, your brother won gold in London 2012. And there's another brother who's rowed for South Africa as well. Am I right?
Yeah, so three brothers, and all of us have our South African colours for rowing. My older brother has the gold medal at London, and but him and my next brother have retired. So they've retired from rowing, but myself and my youngest brother are still rowing in the team. And my youngest brother's under 23 world champion, so he's showing lots of promise. And I think it'll be cool to maybe have a year when I can go with him at some point.
Gee, Sunday lunches at your house must be fun. Do you talk about anything besides rowing?
Yeah, I think like. My wife and I think when she joined the family, it was a bit crazy for her, because I think we literally only spoke about rowing at family lunches. And I think it's, you know, the addition of more girls to the family, as all my brothers are getting engaged and married and stuff. It's I think that's helped us a lot. I think before that it was probably like 100% rowing, and now it's got a bit more balance. But it's also really cool, though. You know, I think it's one of the reasons that my family has done so well. So we were able to, you know, talk about really difficult and complicated, like technical aspects, or you know, racing and emotions, and you know, the stress of racing. You know, and everyone understands that quite well. So I think it's a huge advantage growing up. And you know, obviously we're super competitive, but we also, you know, I've never really had to race against my brothers.
And it sounds like you guys are a tight-knit family. You do stuff with your brothers. I read somewhere that you guys have brewed beer together. Is that right?
Yeah, so we have a little like homebrew setup, and we've brewed quite a bit of beer. You know, we don't drink enough of it because it doesn't go so well with training, but keep my dad supplied pretty well. And it worked quite well during lockdown as well when everyone was running a little dry.
What about some of the other things you like to get up to away from rowing, Lawrence? I mean, I know it's a pretty all-consuming sport, and if you're a professional rower, then effectively it must maximize your time. Any other time to do anything else, whether it's movies, reading, music? What are your personal interests?
Yeah, I do quite a lot of other little bits and pieces. So I run a podcast with one of my other teammates, Jake Green. It's like a rowing podcast. We interview other athletes from around the world, and yeah, it was so much fun and so much. We learned so much chatting to these other athletes and people that have done multiple Olympic medals, or you know, trained in very difficult conditions, and realized that everyone has these like crazy stories and crazy difficulties that they've overcome to get to where they are. Yeah, other things. I mean, I love movies, so. It's been very difficult during lockdown not to be able to go to the movies. Quite a little bit of a geek there. I love watching all sorts of movies, especially like the Marvel movies or, you know, superhero movies.
I was at Varsity with a couple of rowers, Lawrence, and they were the moggiest guys on campus. To be a successful pro rower, do you have to be slightly crazy? Do you have to be a bit moggy?
I think so. Like, when I look at my team and like, I see, like, I mean, there's no, like, set kind of crazy that you have to be. You know, there's not like, oh, you need to be, you know, on this side of the spectrum, but I think most of the team is definitely a little crazy in their own special way, and I think it definitely helps though. I think because the training is so tough, and like physically you really have to put yourself out there again and again, and you have to be so competitive, that I think if you kind of have it all together, then I think you realize what a stupid idea it all is. So you have to be a little bit crazy to enjoy it and to be able to go through it day in, day out.
Lastly, Lawrence, next year's Olympics, what can we expect? And I have no doubt that nothing less than a medal would satisfy you. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've got the silver, and I would love for gold. And, you know, the team's ethos is all about go for gold. You know, it's not about aiming for anything less than that. And we've had such an awesome, you know, the last few years haven't been the best, but, you know, we've had to build the team up again from a very young age. And this year was the first year where I felt things were starting to really click. You know, we're putting combinations on the water that we were really competing with Sean and I's times that we had posted in 2016. And, you know, the energy was really building up, and I was getting so excited about the 2020 games. So having an extra 12 months, I'm just going to see it as an opportunity. I'm just going to, you know, pour everything I can into working on elements that I can work on now. And then when 2021 comes around, hopefully the team is in an even stronger position, and we can find some combinations that are really, really dangerous, which secretly I'm really, really positive about. I think that we can do some real damage, which is really exciting.
So he brews his own beer and he likes his action movies, but it's his story that grabs me, a true inspiration. Lawrence Britton, cancer survivor and Olympic medalist. Can he make it a double in 2021?